Welcome to the Vet Rehab Show. So I had the pleasure of sitting down with Dr. Lisa Mason and Dr. Heather Owen at the VMX conference in Orlando, Florida. And this is a phenomenal conversation. We covered so much. We got into the importance of understanding what's happening to the tissue when you look at it from ultrasound imaging. Dr. Heather Owens has been doing that since day one with the shockwave therapy device. So she has a lot of deep knowledge of how that tissue evolves. And so we talk about that as well as we get into the business side, because as a lot of people know in the vet medicine world, there's a lot of venture capital money coming in, a lot of corporate practices popping up. Dr. Heather Owens, phenomenal private practice out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And Dr. Lisa Mason is a part of the only vet medicine rehab group. So it's more of a partnership, not so much corporate. And there's three different practices now, but they're scaling up and they're looking to add more practices to that partnership. So either way, you get a really good insight on how you can manage your practice as a solo entrepreneur, or if you're looking to really be a part of a larger group. So really good takeaways from that, from the business side. Okay, with that being said, let's get right into today's
conversation. I'm really excited to learn about the vet business today. What's going on? We are here at VMX in Orlando, one of the smallest conferences I've ever been to in the world. Right. But you know, when we think about what's going on in the veterinary world, I should start with, how do you guys first get into the vet world? Dr. Lisa, you want to lead us in?
Like, probably starts when I was a child and wanted to be a vet.
Yeah.
And I definitely shadowed my local veterinarian and loved all the aspects of it. And then I got turned away from it because my own personal family dog passed away in my arms. And that was very detrimental as a small child. So then I wanted to go to medical school and follow along. I'm third generation doctor in my family.
Okay.
And I wanted to do that. And then yet again had another life crisis and decided that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to go to Africa and work with wildlife.
Wow.
So I did that. And that brought me into wildlife rehabilitation. So I started mixing medicine and animals together. And then I realized I missed the medical piece of it. And I wanted to go to vet school. And I finally decided it on my own terms that I wanted to go and do that. So I wanted to be a bird doctor.
Okay.
And and so I actually went to school and did a lot of exotics. Came out and worked at a great practice that combined exotics as well as integrative medicine, and ended up falling in love with rehabilitation therapy and became certified in rehabilitation, acupuncture, and pain management, and have taken away from there and become a standalone rehabilitation facility for the last 3.5 years, and love every minute of it.
Standalone vet rehab. I mean, this is a really growing market, it seems like. So definitely got to press into more about that conversation. But Dr. Heather, you know, you have a beautiful facility out there in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We were like two ships passing in the night.
Yes,
I missed you while you were there. But could you please tell us how you got involved in the whole industry?
Absolutely. So when I was 5 years old, on the playground at school, a group of my friends and I, we all decided we were going to be veterinarians when we grew up. I'm the only one of that group of five that followed through with being the veterinarian. And so they still like to make fun of me today that, didn't you know you could have done something else? But I decided when I was five, my uncle was a veterinarian.
Yeah.
So I wanted to follow in those footsteps of him. When he passed away, it was something that my dad needed. It was something that no longer became just my dream, but it became the family dream.
Oh, wow.
And so he needed that touch with his brother, or that kind of that ability to keep his memory alive. And I didn't realize at that point what a pivotal role I played in helping my dad heal from the loss of his brother. So I went on to veterinary school. I remember sitting there senior year, and we were talking about what we were going to do when we grew up, you know, because we're all 23 to 27 or 30 years old.
Got to figure out life immediately.
Yes, right then. And so I remember sitting in a circle and I said, I'm going to be a surgeon. I'm going to be a veterinary surgeon. I'm going to cut every patient that comes in, and I'm going to help them heal, get them back to full mobility by cutting all the patients.
Wow.
One of my dear friends sat beside me and he says, I'm going to foster troubled teenagers. I'm going to teach them about the circle of life. I'm going to help them heal from their underlying pain by having an animal sanctuary where I'm rescuing people as well as pets.
Wow.
I hate him and love him for that, because he called me on a moment that I didn't realize I even had inside of me. And so it took me a decade to realize what that meant for me. I went off and I did my internship. Then I decided I don't want to do surgery. I want to do emergency and critical care. So I played emergency critical care doctor until I got tired of euthanizing animals from chronic kidney failure and acute kidney failure. And I thought, there's got to be something more that I can do. So I went and became acupuncture certified, never going to use it. I was just going to have it in my back pocket for when I was playing critical care doctor. Unfortunately, or fortunately, every patient that I did acupuncture on got better. And so it really opened my eyesight to the fact that medicine evolves in so many different levels. At that point, I left emergency and critical care and started a house call business. I had one patient, and I went to that patient's home, and animal acupuncture was born. Wow. 12 years later, now we have the only standalone and the first in our tri-state area, standalone acupuncture, rehab, and sports medicine facility in Oklahoma. And so the practice has continued to evolve. My father has completely healed from the loss of his brother, hearing the word doctor in the family again. But I'm getting to live my dream, which is helping pets return to full mobility. But I'm also taking to account my friend who said, hey, there's something more we can do with this. There's something more we can do with the title DBM.
Two really good stories. And, you know, things that really resonate with me on both of those are that there's ripples, right? Like, you make a decision to kind of go with one career path, but it also impacts your families, impacts your community. And, you know, when we think about this side of the vet rehab medicine, is non-invasive care side, right? How has that helped you deal with your careers? Because I could imagine, as you spoke about, if you're a surgeon and you're always doing, you're always cutting on someone and they're, you know, they're already put under and you don't have that kind of like feedback from the patient a lot of times, I'm assuming. How has that impacted your careers? Just kind of moving more into the vet.
Oh, it's the best part.
Yeah.
You know, you don't realize going into vet med that that client-patient relationship is not all that you crave. It's that patient-doctor relationship that drives your success, not necessarily with your career, but with your happiness, your own personal journey. So being able to have your hands on those patients all the time, being able to look for that feedback, that positivity, or that decline, that enables you to practice harder and do a better job.
Yeah, I agree. It's the relationship that you have with your pet, with the patient, with the pets, is so much stronger when we're in rehabilitation and acupuncture. We're not just in a 15-minute exam appointment, in and out. You're not just doing diagnostics and talking to the owners. You're actually spending time, and you're helping those animals to walk again, and you're seeing it on their face. You're changing their whole demeanor. You're making them pain-free, and you're allowing them to be able to live their best life. And that's something I'm very passionate about, is, you know, something that I do and even feel for people is that if we want to live to be 80 years old, then we have to train to be 80 years old. And with our dogs, if we want them to be 15 and we want them to live a good life at 15, we've got to train them early and hard to be able to live to be 15. So we've got to work on muscle strength. We've got to work on nutrition. And those are the basis for how we're able to support these guys to live their best life. And that's ultimately so rewarding for us. You know, that when the client comes to you and they're like, my dog's acting like a puppy again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like so amazing.
I love that. I mean, you know, so I got this kick where I want to lift the 120.
Yeah.
Let's see if this actually plays. But, you know, we think about pet health, and we think about them aging properly. Obviously, it's going to have an impact on the actual owners as well, because, you know, they're in an engagement, and they kind of lost, sometimes just unknowingly, you know, think that, oh, it's just old age, right? Just how bright it is.
Right.
What type of things or warning signs should owners really be considering when they're saying their animal's age?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I see is that the pets are sleeping more. They're no longer engaging with their younger counterparts in the house. They may even be laying down to eat their food. They don't want to go for a leash walk. I mean, most every dog is like, I want to go for a leash walk. And if they don't want to get up and go when you ask them to go, there's clear, obvious signs there that the dog is in a great deal of pain. And it's never just old age. And I think you can probably attest to this too, Heather, is that it's old age is not a disease. Osteoarthritis can happen in a dog that's less than a year of age. So it doesn't mean that just because you're old means that you have osteoarthritis. But the osteoarthritis could be flaring up and causing more pain, or there could be something else going on underlying. And if we can treat that pain, we can allow them to move better, which is going to then strengthen them, and they're going to have better mobility at that point.
You know, even on the human side of the world, right, we have a little bit of ageism in us still, I think, that we're trying to come out of.
Yep.
And we automatically think, oh, well, 60, 70, we're not expecting you to be able to do a squat, drop the floor,
right,
pull off the bike, but people are clearly smashing those concepts and those things daily.
Yep.
You know, from the physical medicine side, obviously you guys are shockwave users, that's how we all linked up, but I'm curious to see, like, what's the common mix of tools and different modalities that you guys have at your practices?
That's another great question. So absolutely. So kind of coming off of this age is not a disease. Mm-hmm. There is not a one-stop shop for every patient's treatment as well. So I think having a well kind of diversified toolbox is really important to be able to treat these patients effectively.
Yeah.
So having photobiomodulation or laser therapy, being able to have shockwave, being able to have e-stim, acupuncture, all of these modalities, in addition to our hands and rehabilitation, helps to improve these patients.
Yeah, and then we both do platelet-rich plasma injections, steroid injections if necessary, hyaluronic acid injections. So think of your human sports medicine clinic. I mean, it's essentially what we do. We're also both trained in musculoskeletal ultrasound to be able to identify injuries. And
well, we got to talk about this because just happening on the human side, right?
Like,
we are just getting into imaging the muscle. I mean, overseas, over in Europe, it's a standard practice. They'll image it, know exactly what depth of penetration they want to choose, they can remodel that tissue, right? But on the human side, it's more of a kind of, you know, spray and pray, right? So, what are you seeing whenever you image the actual tissue before and after shockwave? Is there a noticeable change after normal treatment, or is it 4 to 5 treatments on the line before you start seeing any changes in the tissue?
I think it depends on the severity.
Yeah.
So my mild trigger points, my myofascial trigger points, if it's mild, I'm going to see improvement on musculoskeletal ultrasound after the first treatment.
Wow.
If it's pretty significant or severe or long term with a lot of scar tissue, it may take 4 treatments before I'm seeing anything by shockwave. I think the great thing is I always see change. I always see normal fiber pattern return, and we can base that off of a diagnostic, a piece of equipment that says, hey, we started here, we treated the patient, and now the patient is better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, whenever you talk about seeing change in tissue, at what point do you say, you know what, this therapy is maybe not a good therapy for someone? Like, when do you kind of abandon ship? Like you said, you might wait before a session before you notice any change. Is there a hard stop that you have in your mind where you're like, hey, when we get to treatment 5 or treatment 2, if nothing's happening, I'm going to transition?
I think it's very practitioner dependent, as we've been kind of discussing amongst ourselves as well. You know, for me, a really severe osteoarthritis case, I may actually use shockwave 6 times before I make that determination. We need to move on to the next step, you know, which may be steroid joint injections because that didn't work. With my tendinopathies, like biceps tendinopathy, I'm really looking for them to start feeling better on exam. And I typically actually see that within 3 treatments with these guys. And you can actually physically see a difference on the ultrasound with the size of the biceps tendon and the surrounding fluid or effusion around that tendon. So those are the types of things I'm looking at, basically letting the patient guide the treatment plan. So if the pain is not resolved, then I want to continue to look for shockwave to be able to help me with that. And for me, that's a big indicator to use shockwave, is actually if there's pain. So I'm able to blunt those C fibers of pain to be able to help them to just resolve that discomfort. You know, even when I have a recent case I had a little joint flare after doing some PRP injections, and I followed it up with a little shockwave, and that patient within a minute of shockwave was like, I already feel better. You know, so it's an immediate effect of the shockwave, which is really kind of what we're looking for as a tool to be able to help pain management on these cases.
Love that. No, that makes so much sense. And you know, it's interesting because on the human side, we have conversations with our patients. Like, do you feel it here? They give feedback. Sometimes they're stoic, sometimes they're, you know, really expressive. But of course, with your patients, it's a totally different type of understanding whether they're having that actual shockwave feedback from actual tools. So how do you guys read that? Like, what's your steps are? What type of signs are you looking for?
Yeah, that. So I know that we have a video that Heather was going to show, or that's playing over here, that the dog actually twitches its ear whenever she's on the right spot. I tend to look at how the dogs blink their eyelids. They'll like do a really heavy blink when you're on the right spot. Sometimes they'll give you like this big yawn. They'll like show you all these signs of like release when you're over that location. They may be panting before you do it, and then when you're on the spot, they'll hold their breath. So it's these like very subtle signs that you can kind of pick up on during the actual shockwave treatment itself. And if they get super wiggly, usually I'm like, that's probably too intense for you. Let's come down a little bit. So in I think rehab vets particularly, we have to be very in tune to the patient's pain and these very subtle signs. So it's not always, I'm going to pull my leg away from you because I don't like it. Sometimes it's other things, like I just mentioned, that we have to look for. Yeah.
Well, and the behavioral aspect, you know, I think that's the most fun part of playing rehab vet. When I start working with a patient and they start leaning into that shockwave, they're like right there, and then they work their body into that right area where that probe is, you're sitting there going, ah, we've got it. And then you get those behavioral cues, exactly like what Dr. Mason was talking about. So we get the ear twitch, the eye twitch, we get the moving or changing positions, but we also get that lean of that patient likes that feeling. And that tells us that we're not, you know, looking at a behavioral harm for that patient. We're treating the pain, but we're also looking at the patient. Then we can back it up with objective parameters too. You know, what is their goniometry? Are we working on a pet with osteoarthritis and we're working on arthritic pain? Are we working on a tendinopathy where that pet, it hurt them to extend a shoulder joint? If it hurt them and now we can get that range of motion without pain, that gives us that objective parameter to say, hey, we're making a difference in that dog's comfort level.
Now we're getting
it. I was going to say, I had a German Shepherd dog that I treated for her hips, and she actually would walk into the room and she would go and sit in front of the piezo wave. And she literally do that. And I would laugh because I was like, you know, most shepherds are like, they don't like procedures. They don't want you to do anything for them. And then she was like, yep, no, that made me feel better. So we're going to go and sit by that. It was cute.
You know, and so this brings into the best part of the conversation to me, the art and science of physical therapy, right? Because out there, so art form, like how should doctors think about learning the art form of physical therapy?
I think that's hard for people, because as much as we can tell you what's wrong, we also logically know maybe if I don't tell them and I bear down and just deal with it, that it's going to be better. I think so. That's where our dogs are very truthful.
They are.
They don't lie to us. They tell us where the pain is. Now, there's some dogs that are like, I'm not really going to tell you where everything is, but I am telling you, my body is telling you. So it's hard for me to tell an MD how to do that, because I think that the exam in human medicine is so small as far as what they use in diagnosing these days. They use a lot more of their diagnostic tools to be able to come up with a diagnosis, where we're, a lot of the times, it's starting with our hands. It's starting with what we feel, and then we're going from there, versus the other way around. Oh, the MRI showed that you have a calcification on your biceps, and then let's go and feel and see what that looks like, or let's do ultrasound. You know, I even heard a lecture this weekend that a rehab medicine doctor went to her physical therapy doctor, and they didn't even do an exam, and they just said, let's go do an MRI on you. And I'm like, I want you to do an exam on me. I want you to know what's going on. I want you to know the range of motion. So I think getting in touch with your exam is the very first thing I would tell you is the art part of medicine, and doing a lot of them.
And the compensatory aspect. You know, I think the hardest part of being a vet rehabber versus a human, I mean, when we're a human, we can sit there and say, okay, well, we can see that patient shift on the one of two legs. We have four. We're making a distinction between which leg are they offloading. But when we treat what happened last first, that pet goes off of the compensatory aspect, and then we can get to that primary problem. So we know the compensation happened last. We can get that pet out of pain quicker by starting with what happened last first, and then we work our way back to the primary. And I think that's one of the reasons, you know, I always tell my clients that my goal in life is to become more like a dog. The longer I live, I want to go to work every day and love and serve my clients with a happy heart. expecting nothing in return, mm-hmm. because our dogs do this every day. They come in on three legs or on two legs out of the four. They're wagging their tail, they're serving their owner in the room, mm-hmm. especially trying to help calm the owner that's nervous. Mm-hmm. They're not biting us on evaluation. And I sit there and I think to myself, how many times do we as humans act the same way? You know, if I get a paper cut, am I compensating? Absolutely, immediately. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to use this hand, I'm going to use the other hand. I'm going to immediately start trying to compensate. I might be angry, I might bite the hand that feeds me because I'm dealing with pain, but our pets don't do that, and consequently they get better quicker. Mm-hmm. When we give them that little bit of feeling better, they take it and run a mile with it.
So whenever you're taking someone through your different protocols and these examples, like, how fast are you guys seeing results? Is it something that you get some immediate impacts, or is it something that you guys are really planning to be with the patient for like a quarter, like maybe 3-4 months?
Yeah, that's a really great question, because, and that's something that I've been really focused on lately, even in my own physical health, is that everything needs to be goal-oriented. So you need to have these reachable goals. And whether it's that we're looking at goiniometry and we're comparing those numbers from, you know, what was it now we did, you know, maybe 3 shock waves, what is it at the end of 3 shock waves? Or our goal is just that patient is able to get off the floor easier. We have to have a goal to be able to reach in order to have expectations, you know, normal expectations. So, and that's something I always align with my clients, is I say, what are your goals? Because your goals may not align with my goals. You know, my goal may be we're going to take your dog and we're going to be able to run a mile. Your goal may be we're just getting off the floor. And so that's going to determine on how fast I need to work my treatment plan. Because if that owner is like, I'm going to give up in a month if you don't get it done, just like that case you presented today, if the client wants you to get it done in 2 visits, then you got to get it done in 2 treatments. So it's all goal-based for what the client wants, what we want, and what the normal expectations are.
Absolutely, and I think that's well said again. You know, one of our first questions that we ask clients are, what is your goal? What is your goal? Mm-hmm. Because again, my goal is that we have as close to normal as possible,
yep.
but not every client wants that.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that we'll say is for everything that we do to help our patients, mm-hmm. they always leave feeling better than mm-hmm. they did coming in, no matter where they're at in their treatment process.
Yep.
So if we're on treatment number one, that animal is walking out feeling better than they did walking in the door. Mm-hmm. We're not at our goal yet, but we're someplace, and we're moving in the right direction towards mm-hmm. our goal.
And I think people can give up if you don't reach that goal at the rate of speed that they want that goal reached. I mean, it's just like, I want to lose 15 pounds. It didn't happen after working out for a week. I give up. Can't do that, right?
It's a marathon.
Right, it is, and in some cases, like, we'll have cases that are a pretty hot mess, maybe all 4 legs are involved in the back and everything, and we're like, we're not going to accomplish this overnight. And you have to have that honest conversation with the client of what is going to happen in the process, you know, and, you know, you mentioned this in your lecture today about giving them honest expectations. You know, when you have a tendinopathy, it's going to, in some cases, be 4 to 6 months before that patient is back to running or doing agility or whatever it needs to be. And so while maybe the shockwave is going to get them more comfortable within the first month, and you might see, you know, a really, really nice result at that point, they cannot go and run and be crazy after 1 month of shockwave, because they're going to feel like they want to, you know. So it's all about knowing the tissue healing as well, and taking, that's where being a rehabilitation vet is the important part, in including that person into the treatment plan, because we're aware of the tissue healing times and how this tissue is actually on the microscopic level is actually getting to a better place.
I gotta say, you know, this is one of the joys of talking to you two about what's happening in the vet side of the world, because on the human side, it's like sick thing, right? We're treating issues and then you're out the door. Okay.
Right. Well, then they move them on to a different practitioner. Now you go see the physical therapist. The physical therapist doesn't really know what the sports medicine guy did. So it's very compartmentalized in human medicine versus what we're doing is well within the scope of both of those practices. And so then we're able to walk them through that process on a whole versus passing them on to someone else to take over. So I think that's another part. I think that's what a big flaw in human medicine at this time is the compartmentalization that has happened within medicine.
That was what I said. And the lack of goals. The lack of clear goals about what you're doing with your health. Like, what type of lifestyle you want to live.
Right.
Are you okay with living on a couch for 20 hours?
Right. 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 I can do a total hip on you, but if you don't lose the weight and you don't eat right and you don't exercise, then your lifestyle's not going to be any different. So, and I mean, it needs to be addressed as a whole body approach or holistic approach. Sometimes people are afraid of that term, but honestly, treating the entire organism, patient, body is really the appropriate way to go about that.
So is it being accepted more in the animal world as far as the physical medicine side, the rehab side? Is that like something that's becoming more of a common?
It is. You know, yeah, it's funny because when I first started off doing this, you know, I went from being a normal vet with a great reputation as a normal vet to the, oh, you're going there. You're going to the voodoo doctor, voodoo. And I remember thinking, but I'm still the same vet I was, but now I'm just tapping into this aspect. Mm-hmm. And now what I get by my colleagues is, there's a problem with your dog. I'm starting your dog on symptom relief. I'm giving your dogs the anti-inflammatories. You need to go see Heather. She's going to put your dog back together again. She's going to heal your dog from the inside out. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to come back to me, and she's going to tell me when we're able to go off those anti-inflammatories. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really neat camaraderie that we're developing because it's a codependency that's happening in our profession, which we need. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not us versus them or them versus us. Mm-hmm. It's one group, one team of doctors with great communication skills, mm-hmm. all reaching for what each of us do best. Mm-hmm. And that, in turn, takes a holistic, with a W, approach to that animal, gets them back to full return to normal, or mm-hmm. as close to normal as their body allows.
Mm-hmm. How to build up that reputation? Because I would say that's beautiful. Like the fact that you have relationships with people that understand what you do and what they do, and there's like clear lines and lanes that each person can really operate in. Like, what type of best, you know, advice would you give to other practitioners out there to be able to establish themselves in their community, to be able to say, okay, this is what I do well, and I still want to respect what you do as well?
Oh, I think that's a great question, and it's been such a huge learning curve. For me personally, it took getting to know each of my veterinarians well. It took getting to know what each of their goals were well. I have a lot of veterinarians that have laser therapy. I have a lot of veterinarians that have PiezoWave. So it's sitting there and saying, what do you like well about your practice? Because I'm going to let you keep that. I may guide you in the dosing. I may guide you on the location, but I want you to keep doing what you've invested in. Regen Med, you know, we have several practitioners in our area that are getting into regenerative medicine. So when we have a client that comes in and it's appropriate for that patient, I'm going to send them back to that primary care doctor, allow them to do that. And in return, they don't want anything to do with the functional medicine aspect. They then send them back to us for the functional. And so I think it's just about getting to know them and not robbing Peter to pay Paul. You know, I don't take anything that my primary vets are doing. There's no need to. There's enough work for all of us out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think during the COVID pandemic, I've seen more vets like be okay with letting patients go a little bit for certain things, and I think it's because everybody is just slammed busy. But I also think, and they just don't have the time to work these cases up. They don't have the time to sit there and do a really good neuromuscular exam. They want us to be able to help them, and they start to build a trust. And I would say it takes years to do that. I've even had veterinarians bring me their own aging pets and say, how can you help me? And I've walked their pets through their geriatric years. You know, I've got one client, she brings me her 15-year-old Rhodesian Ridgeback, and she's like, this is the oldest Rhodesian Ridgeback I've ever known. And she's like, you're going to keep it going. And we got her walking, you know, and we keep caring for her. And she, in turn, sends me a great deal of her geriatric patients that need help with mobility or any cases that she doesn't know how to approach. So it's building that relationship of trust, not taking their things from them. I'm not going to do vaccines. I don't do blood work. What I do is I take care of the mobility issues in these dogs, and I'll help them with pain management. And I find a lot of the vets have actually learned something from me, and they are able to, you know, start the pain management off appropriately to start with. And then I don't have to do that piece of it. I can focus on the rehab bit.
Love that. How you're building up your practice throughout the community. A big thing that I've noticed, a lot of venture capital money coming into the space and buying up a lot of these hospital groups. And how do you guys compete with these different, you know,
Totally different perspectives on this one, right?
We do. We do. So I am part of the only rehabilitation partnership in the country right now. We are three clinics, and I think some of the best well-known veterinarians are part of this, and it's an honor to be part of it. I am not directly competing with a lot of these big hospitals around me because they're not around me. I don't do anything that any of the corporate hospitals around me are doing, so I don't have that kind of competition. But I love the partnership that we've developed, and it's not corporate. So I've actually made the most out of it, and been able to help myself, you know, as far as HR and being able to bounce ideas off of very smart business people. So I've actually made it the most, you know, beneficial thing that I could probably do.
It sounds very entrepreneurial, kind of like almost it like is. You're working your own business inside of business.
I am.
Almost.
Yes.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so now I'm like three clinics, and I don't have to like worry about, like, I'm not my single clinic anymore. Like, we've got three clinics and we're, you know, expanding, and it's called Veterinary Rehabilitation Orthopedic Medicine Partners, or VROMP for short. And we are in Minnesota, Chicago, and then in Florida here.
Wow, I love it, love it. Do you have any more ambitions of expanding throughout the rest of the country, or you guys kind of?
We do, yeah. So hopefully we're going to add some other clinics, and, you know, we're actively trying to, you know, build a couple of clinics in a couple of places as well. So, you know, I think right now we're one at a time because it's a lot of work. But yeah, so we're very ambitious about growing this partnership. It's really wonderful what we've gotten so far through it.
So the other end of the spectrum. So love what Dr. Mason is involved with. And every day I sit there weighing the pros and cons of jumping all in on her side. We call it the good side of the table versus my solo practitioner in the deep end, treading water every day with concrete blocks tied around my ankles. Otherwise known as sole owner and veterinarian. It's completely different on this side of it because everything that we have is we have added based on our margin. And so we have to have a healthy margin. We have to have an understanding of the business side of rehab because the profit margin is so small. And so we want to be able to add the tools to our toolbox, but we don't want to take from what our competitors are doing, and they're doing well. So as we see these large corporations around us, they are adding acupuncturists, they're adding photobiomodulation, they're adding shockwave, and they're developing a great skill set for it. They're going to continue to grow in that skill set, but it won't scare or jeopardize me. And I don't mean that from an ego standpoint. I mean it from the mom-pop operation standpoint. Mm-hmm. Our clients seek us out because we are small. And so they know that I am the owner. I'm the medical director. I'm the office manager. I wear multiple hats, and they like that because when there's a problem, they can come directly to me. Mm-hmm. So it's not to say that every day I'm not thinking about selling and going in, because that would be a lie. So it truly is an everyday problem just from the HR standpoint. But I love that even us at this other extreme of the equation, we're able to keep up mm-hmm. and stay afloat with all the big companies around us.
Mm-hmm. I had no clue that it was going to be this good. So we get both sides of the coin.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I was able to work in the corporate side of general practice. So I think I have a great love relationship with corporations as a whole. There's a purpose for them, and they serve that purpose well. They provide security. They provide resources that we can't as a solo doc. But I will say the one thing that I love about keeping, like the reason I left corporate medicine was that I wanted to not have to answer to anyone else. I wanted to be able, when I had a sick kid, to be able to call those clients and say, hey, I've got a sick kid. I'm not going to be able to be there this afternoon, but I can come in on Saturday and I can be there. Well, we're not open on Saturday, but I am for you. I love being able to bend the rules, and I love being able to not have rules that I have to follow that allows me to have a work-life balance between raising my four children and running a practice. So I think for me in this season, I would not have done well had I been involved in corporate, because not for other people, but for me and my ability to multitask. I've had sick kids, and I've had kids that were unpredictable, and I've had to take off a lot of time and work a lot of weird, non-conventional hours. So that's one of my reasons for staying here until my kids get a little bit older.
Love it. So, you know, I can take a couple of clues there and things in the future, but either way, though, I think that's really good takeaways.
I'm not really corporate, so I guess I would say that it's more of a partnership. So yeah, so I still own my practice, but I'm just joined in with a partnership. So I still get the autonomy that Heather has. I still have all of those things, but I get to bounce ideas off of other people, and that's the part I really love. So being able to talk to business-minded people is really great, and then I also have so many resources of Julia Tomlinson, who I think you're going to get to talk to tomorrow. She's been doing this for a great deal of time. And so being able to bounce ideas off of her best practices and formulating rehab best practices is really what I like. Still having the autonomy within the practice is also amazing. So I honestly get the best of both worlds. So I can't really complain too much on that, because I still, like, if I need to make financial decisions on the fly, I do that. You know, and that's, it's nice because I'm looking for another rehab vet, if anybody's out there listening. And I really don't have the time to spend sitting there learning about it, doing the resume reading, going through, you know, contracts with people. So I have somebody else doing that for me, and it's really lovely. And I kind of like get to sit there and like be a step away from things, but I'll also get to give my input, and my input is the strongest. So I really, like I said, I'm just kind of the best of both worlds right now. I don't have like really any complaints about it. And if anything, like, it's really helped me, you know, to have a little bit, I say I have a little bit more time, but honestly, when I take anything away, I add something to it. So I don't really have any extra time right now. That's just my personality. But I love being able to sit down and like budgeting for the next year. I get to sit down and budget with like people that have CPAs and can sit there and be like, well, let's look at your old numbers. Now let's create a new budget based off of your old numbers and what we can predict for the future. I did that on the fly. Before I joined with this partnership, I just was like, you know what, I'm guesstimating, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to be maybe a growth of 30%. I'm going to assume this. I've been scared to like raise my prices because that makes me super nervous. And I've got some backing to say, you know what, you need to do that. Hint, hint.
Already done.
And so having, it's just like all of a sudden you go from being this like little fish in the sea to having a whole school of fish behind you, you know, and like feeling like you're actually being supported through life. That's been what it is for me. Now, I do know that there are some corporations that have come in to other rehabilitation practices. I can't speak for them, but I can say that rehabilitation medicine and rehab business is very different from general medicine business. And you will know that too, Heather. Oh,
absolutely. The margin is so completely different. Your average transaction per order is so different.
So different.
You can't compare the two.
Yeah.
And I think that this, it speaks volumes, right? We have two completely different experiences, and we're both extremely happy.
Yep.
And I think that's the most amazing take home.
Yeah.
You can be the little fish. You can be part of a partnership. You can be involved in a corporation.
Yeah.
And you can have work-life balance. You can enjoy your profession again.
Yeah.
It's been an awesome conversation. I'm glad that we found it.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you so much for having us.